Good evening. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm Shifters, from my perspective, are people who are making a difference on our planet, in the collective of our species, at this wonderful time of the shift. Things are changing all over the world. People are changing. And one of the things that I believe we're headed toward is self-empowerment. So our paradigm shifter tonight is a very exciting gentleman who really helps you empower yourself over your health, over your, would you say, expression, over all kinds of things. Welcome, Robert Bates.
Thank you very much.
Robert Bates is a teacher of Qigong and also a craniosacral
therapist, mm-hmm, and a non-force chiropractor.
Aha.
Uh-huh. And a medical Qigong therapist.
Yeah, medical Qigong. I want to know what Qigong is for starters, but I'm really interested in what medical Qigong is.
I think we should start with just what Qigong is, because a lot of people aren't aware of Qigong. And Qigong is one of the most powerful self-healing mechanisms there is, I think. Qigong, first of all, you should know, is spelled Q-I-G-O-N-G.
And you look at it and think, huh?
Qigong.
Yeah.
It's also sometimes spelled C-H-I space K-U-N-G. So that's confusing.
Now, and chi is actually our life force energy, isn't it? Our subtle
there's
energy.
Many different definitions for what chi is, and I've been collecting a lot of these different definitions, different ideas about what it is, different ways of explaining what it is. Mm-hmm. One of my teachers explained qigong as the bridge between matter and spirit. I mean, chi, the bridge between matter and spirit.
Oh, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, so you have to have, you have the consciousness and you have the matter, but you have to have some force between them that lets them interact.
Mm-hmm.
And so Qigong, in other words, is balancing your mind, your body, and your spirit.
Hmm. And so if we're having big health problems, the qi is actually just blocked, isn't it, or congested?
It's one of the ways to look at it. Basically, any health issue could be looked at as stagnation.
Okay.
So it could be compression in your vertebra. It could be stuck lymph fluid that's causing a backup. It could be a boring life. It's often a boring life. too many hours at the office or too many hours watching football. Everything in moderation is also one of the Qigong ideas. So what we want to do with Qigong is use basic breathing methods and movement methods, a little bit of focus, meditation, kind of balance these all together in order to get things moving again, to get things balanced again. That's one of the things we want to do. The other thing we do with Qigong is we use these simple movements in breathing to bring in energy and to nourish our organs, to nourish our spirit, to nourish our fluids like our blood and our lymph, to nourish our brain, things like that.
Tell me this. Do you think qi and spirit are interchangeable words?
I don't think so. I think spirit is a focus and a consciousness, but qi is an actual energy of movement.
Okay.
Qi is really about movement and about the body, about physical things moving.
Hmm. Well, I know that Qigong and many of these other Eastern techniques started a long, long time ago.
They did. If I could just go back one moment to the qi and spirit question, I was at a seminar one time and there was a Tai Chi master. Now, Tai Chi and Qigong are very similar. Tai Chi has these graceful movements that work with the qi,
mm-hmm,
and it's very health-giving. But this Tai Chi master said that you should not have qi in your head, you should have spirit in your head.
Oh, interesting.
But in the modern world, especially in America, we all have so much energy, so much qi in our head that we're exploding from the inside out. And so part of what we do in Qigong is relax our brains, breathe into our bellies, and drop the most part of our energy into our lower abdomens.
Oh, interesting. Take it out of your thought process.
Yeah, I think
why do
your
you think
body.
That's like that in our society? Because it's the information age? There's just too much available?
Because we weren't taught how to think. We are taught how to think with our brains instead of with our whole bodies.
Interesting.
And so with Qigong, we relearn how to think. We try to think with our whole body so we have access to our body wisdom, to our subconscious mind, which Candace Pert says is our body.
Right.
And we have access to ancestral wisdom, to like our DNA, and to our cellular wisdom.
Hmm.
We have more access to the wisdom around us speaking to us from nature when we're in our body. But when we're in our brain, what we're basically doing is accessing our memories instead of accessing our presence.
So it's the many, many layers of intelligence that we can access better when we get the chi running through.
Access better and feel better doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking with our brain causes all kinds of problems. I mean, we use our brain, yes, but we should use it as a subset as our entire body.
Okay, so if our brain wears us out literally because it can exhaust us, is this the fountain of youth?
Oh, it's the fountain of more youth. It's a fountain of greater longevity.
And how old, talking about longevity, it is a really old system, isn't it?
Nobody knows how old it is, but it goes back deep into what they can find in the writings in Chinese history.
Mm-hmm.
And there are literally thousands of ancient texts talking about Qigong. And there's one set that's for sure 1,800 years old, and it was in development long before that. But that's a five animal frolics, and people are still practicing that today.
You wonder how it all started, don't you?
There are stories, but I don't think anybody really knows. Some people say it just started with people dancing by the Yellow River in order to kick out the evils that had entered their body from the stagnant, swampy air.
Interesting. So how did you get into Qigong? Were you dancing by the river?
I was not dancing by the river. I was studying at college and taking karate and getting very, very tired.
And getting very tired?
Getting very tired. I'd been an athlete and a student.
What kind of an athlete?
Well, basic American sports, football, baseball, those
golf?
Kind of things. No, not golf. Basketball.
But you were getting tired from the very things that you love to do.
I was, and I'd also done a lot of hard work working in the woods in the summer and raised on a farm, done a lot of hard labor sort of things. And the work ethic in America was actually making me tired. And what I learned was I was pushing and using my body to get things done, but I wasn't replenishing my body. And the more I tried to work out, the more tired I got because it was just working. I wasn't also replenishing. So I started looking into different energetic systems like Aikido.
So it's like a process of resistance all the time when people do that, isn't it?
It is resistance, and it's also a draining sort of thing.
Right.
So they're draining their internal organ energy.
Mm-hmm.
You drain your internal organ energy, your brain gets tired, your muscles get tired, your digestion gets tired, and none of it works as good.
So you were just kind of petering out and getting...
I was petering out. I was actually in practice then as a chiropractor and having to take like these long naps and just what the heck's wrong with me. And But I kept looking. I think a lot of times that's a secret. You just keep looking. You keep trying things. You find something that's working, you try it some more. And so I started hearing and reading about Qigong. And it was not very available back then. It's still not that available, but there's more and more people teaching. There's more and more books and DVDs out there, including mine. So I found Qigong, and I took some Qigong lessons, and I thought, this is really good. It energizes me. I feel good. And yet, while it's simple, there's all this deep wisdom in it, and I can see I can study this the rest of my life and still not learn everything that I can learn that is there to learn in it. So I just kept studying. I decided, you know, I'm going to devote myself to this. Got to choose something.
Was it a huge process to get from being a sports playing and karate playing chiropractor over to being a Qigong artist?
No, it was just a little shift because so much of Qigong is about gentle movement and about movement. And I'd been training in movement my entire life, you know, playing sports and doing karate forms and things like that. And I just transformed that idea of doing all these different moves in a more violent way to a softer way. And I still do. I do forms, and some of them are very complex. They're not usually the ones I teach to beginners, but I enjoy doing them sometimes. And it's really interesting intellectually while energizing physically.
What do you mean interesting intellectually?
Well, one of the things about the Chinese internal arts like this, the movement arts, is there's many different things to pay attention to, many things to learn about, like physiology and energy flow, and energy structures and body posture. And so the more I learn about the body, the better my Qigong is.
Hmm.
And the better I learn Qigong, the better I am at working with the body.
Well, it's interesting because isn't it, you work with meridians, it's the energy flows in the body that you're releasing, is that right?
Actually, there's so many different energy flows. Meridians are the ones people hear a lot about, but really every structure of the body has its own flows. The bones have wonderful flows.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the joints of the bones are called the energy gates of the body.
Hmm.
There's flows through the fascia, which are the membranes that wrap around lots of different things.
Mm-hmm.
There's blood flows. And one of the great things that Qigong works when you do the slow type of Qigong, most mm-hmm. of it's pretty slow, is it moves the lymph in the body.
Hmm.
So if you do like a 3 to 4 second inhale and a 3 to 4 second exhale, and then time your movements with your exhales, what happens is all of the lymph in your body starts pumping very slowly but powerfully with a much better quality in a way that it wasn't before.
Hmm.
So you all of a sudden have greatly increased your immunity. At the same time, you feel really relaxed and really whole.
So the lymphs are for the immunity? I mean, explain
to me. A big part of what the lymph is cleaning the body of detritus.
Okay.
Cleaning the body of broken cells and cancer cells and toxins that you've absorbed. But what it also
from our society.
There's so many toxins out there in our food and in the air and in our cars and wherever else in our paint. And so we have a bigger job these days to clear out. So we need Qigong even more
mm-hmm.
than they did in the past, I think. And so the lymph actually, one of the things it does is it turns on the healing forces of the body.
Mm-hmm.
It turns on the parasympathetic nervous system,
okay.
which is a part of the nervous system that heals and helps digestion. It's a part of the nervous system that slows down. So I think of parasympathetic like parachute. When the parachute comes out, you slow down.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's safe.
Blocks the lymphatics? And I had a wonderful healing session with you the other day. It was absolutely... I won't forget it, is what I'm going to say. And yet your work was really just a very subtle touching, but there were flows moving inside
yes.
my body and between organs. And
yes.
What is it that stifles the movement of that energy in our body?
Any contraction
okay.
of a muscle, of a bone, can stop the lymph.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the lymph can just get a little tired and get a little confused. It can get... One of the things that stops the lymph is it's cleaning out too much stuff.
Okay, so it gets overwhelmed?
It gets overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can go and gently help it along. In Qigong, we do that by things like shaking, gently shaking up and down for a few minutes. And it helps just loosen up where it's stuck so it can start working again. It's like a stream that's full of sticks, and so it's backing up. You pull some of those sticks out, and the stream can flow again, and from there it will help clean out the rest of the sticks.
Yeah, I have to say that I went to one of your classes and it was great. You did 5 minutes of shaking, which was just standing in one spot and loosening your legs, your arms, your shoulders, and just shaking, and people were all shaking. I've done that since each day, and boy, it really sends a vibrance through the body, doesn't it?
You feel vibrant afterwards. You just sometimes will have a buzz. I've done that for up to 20 minutes at a time.
Really?
It's a great safe way to help your health.
It really seems very simple, doesn't it?
It does, and I usually use that at the beginning of class because I like it as a warm-up and as an entry point into some of the more internalizing energies. So in Qigong, you want to start with a warm-up and then do some clearing work before you start doing adding.
Is the shaking clearing? Or?
Yes, it's a clearing and it's a warming up.
You know, I'm really interested as an intuitive about how we absorb one another's energy. And
mm-hmm.
if you want to authenticate, you have to find techniques for separating enough to really be yourself. Does that work that way?
How do you mean?
Well, it seems like just doing the shaking and doing the tapping all over your body, it seemed like each person was more present in her own, there were only women there that day, in her own energy, in her own authentic energy space. I thought that was a rather simple way
just to get
style.
What's not you out of you.
Yeah, I really liked it, actually.
Yeah, a lot of people just do that. I had one student. She had a decision to make about a vacation, and she's all worried because it was the middle of winter, and what kind of clothes would she wear? And there was all this stuff that was just stopping her. So just she just stood up and started shaking because she remembered what I said, when in doubt, shake. So she shook. And then all of a sudden, the answers came to her, and she knew how to solve her little problem, and the vacation was great.
And I would probably want to say, I'll bet you all kinds of other people's ideas are flitting around as little energy tools before that. And
the ideas that aren't your ideas.
That aren't your ideas.
Right. Exactly.
So our thought lymphs get blocked, don't they?
Indeed they do. And so they take us out of our authenticity.
Well, you know, and the first time we talked, we were talking about how medical coverage could save a fortune in medical coverage.
Yeah, that's one of the ideas that I think is maybe the biggest idea here. Our medical system is so vastly bloated and expensive.
It's expensive, yes.
Even if it was wonderful, it's still expensive. Even if it didn't cause problems by over-treating and doing surgery when you shouldn't do surgery and over-drug use and all that sort of stuff. Just putting that aside, it's still so expensive. Qigong is so cheap. I mean, for a few dollars, you can take a lesson, you can buy a video, you can get a few books, you can get together with a few people. I'll tell you how cheap it is. For the last 7.5 years, every Thursday morning, I get together with a training partner, and for 2 hours, we do Qigong.
Hmm.
And it doesn't cost us anything except gas.
Hmm.
One day, I go to his house. The next week he comes to my house.
Wow. Can you tell us any stories of people or yourself or your friend that had any healings that are kind of a...
A lot of people have some interesting healings, and some of them are more subtle than others. But a lot of them are like just a clarity of mind mm-hmm. that happens when you clear your body out, understanding what you need to do in terms of something. But then there are people with shoulder healings.
Mm-hmm.
And different kind of pains that'll go away. A lot of people are doing work with my insomnia Qigong, which I learned from a guy named Jerry Allen Johnson, who's a Qigong master.
Yeah, I was following those. I was practicing
yeah.
with them on your website.
I've had a number of people get rid of their insomnia by doing those practices.
Mm-hmm. And they're really easy, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. They're really easy to do, and they're on my website. They're on video. I've had people with sinus congestion do something called the white butterfly and make the sinus congestion go away.
What's the white butterfly like?
The white butterfly is a standing exercise where you cross your hands in front of your face in a certain way and you hold it and you let the energy run through the meridians, the lung and large intestine meridians.
So you posture so the energy flow will be directed, is that it?
You direct the energy first into your sinuses, then into your throat, and then into your chest, and you hold each one for about a minute.
Hmm.
You can do it lying down. It's pretty easy.
Have you ever been, this is a pretty loaded question, I guess. Have you ever been really ill since you started doing it?
I have been really ill, but not in the last 6 years. The last time I was sick was in 2004 when I was in Italy.
Hmm.
Since then, whenever I felt a cold coming on, I stop and do a bunch of Qigong.
You do, eh? So what do you do for a cold?
Well, one of the best things for a cold is a set called Hunyuan Qigong.
Okay.
And it's slow, rhythmic Qigong that really moves the Qi through the torso and the arms and the legs and the whole body. There's 12 different movements.
Hmm.
And so I actually put together a set that's kind of a truncated version of that and added healing sounds to it.
Okay.
And I call it Qigong for preventing colds and flu.
Oh, wow.
And that's what I do.
Is it on your website?
Some of it's on my website, but not the whole thing.
Okay.
But that's what I do. And so what happens if I'm sick or I feel like I'm tired and I'm getting run down, I'll stop and do that for about 10 minutes or 15 minutes until I feel my hands warm up and feel my breathing slow down and feel some shift in my torso. It's like, oh, it's not fluttery. It's more smooth. And then a couple hours later, I'll do it again.
Hmm.
And then a couple hours later, I'll do it again. And usually by the third time, I'm feeling fine.
Hmm.
So far, that's worked for me. It took me a while to learn how to drop into my organs and actually be inside my organs when I'm doing the Qigong, really feel the connection between my lungs and my liver or in my kidneys and that kind of thing. and know when it's really blocked. And once you get that feeling, you can know how to do the Qigong to make it work for you.
So then you know when you're practice. I mean, you're doing a daily practice, right?
Yeah, I have a daily practice.
So you know when your daily practice is actually cleaning out the heart congestion or stagnation.
Yes.
You know that?
Yeah.
Do you have, because I was reading a lot of things and I realized that people with heart problems, for example, should be able to be helped quite well with this.
Okay. It's amazing what it can do for heart problems. One of the things you can do is you can relax all of your blood vessels. So instead of pumping blood through with extra force, they open and they allow the blood to come through. So you reoxygenate your cells by relaxation instead of by exercise. So it's an internal opposite of exercise sort of thing. And so the blood pressure will then lower.
So I'm going to jump to an extreme here, which is that a lot of us in my age category, which shall remain secret, have a lot of dental history.
Yes.
For example. And so I'm thinking, is it the kind of system that will actually clear out some of that, the damage, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, and, you know, and toxicity kind of damage that comes from that?
Part of what you have in Qigong, there are a number of subsections. One of them is self-massage. And so there are a number of different kinds of massages, like tapping your gums.
Oh, okay.
That can help relax.
And how do you tap your gums?
You just
on
like
your cheeks?
Play piano on your gums.
Oh, really?
Just little fingertips on your gums, on your teeth.
A little like tapping your body and shaking
your body. Little tapping. Yeah, little taps. That's one of the things. And then one Qigong teacher, Dr. Wong in Seattle, he says that if you clash your teeth together 100 times every day, just like that, that really helps the strength and the health of your teeth. Because then what happens is all the teeth are in the same rhythm. Boom, 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 boom. So they line up, but it moves the lymph and stuck whatever out of the teeth. And it also energetically aligns them. And the way I think about it is if you have a jar full of rocks and maybe some sand and it's all jumbled in there, if you shake that up and down 100 times, it layers out and it sediments. And so so that it gets organized. And so by clenching your teeth together like that, not too hard, you organize the molecules, I guess. Organize the cells or whatever. Probably some energetic thing in the teeth. That's one way.
So an obvious question to jump to from that is, what about bacteria or viral things? Is obviously the teeth have bacteria around them, but does that the movement process, the constant shaking or whatever it is, the challenge, does that really help with things like bacteria?
Well, it doesn't. Qigong doesn't obviate the need for basic hygiene.
Right.
You know, we need to take care of ourselves.
I kind of didn't mean that. I mean, you know, we rush for antibiotics and so on. It's pretty dangerous not to go for those. You know, would you use Qigong in those cases?
Yeah. You do. Part of it is increasing the lymph flow, like we were talking about. You can actually increase your lymph flow by 10 or 20 times by doing Qigong.
Really?
A really good Qigong practice, you can increase it a lot. Some of this information I've gotten from the system called lymph drainage therapy, which Bruno Chicli, a Frenchman, put together. And I've applied it to Qigong about the lymph. And you can increase it amazingly. And they've also done experiments.
What is that kind of therapy? Is that a hands-on kind
of? It's what I was doing with you the other day where you,
you help
the lymph along like a little very soft squeegee just on top of the skin, stuck lymph. And it's, yeah, it's amazing what can happen when you destagnate a place. One of the problems with body work is if you're working on a place and it's all stagnant in there, there's not much room for things to change. So you, say you're doing a massage on a muscle or something. But if you can move that stagnancy out by getting the lymph to flow and drain, all of a sudden there's more room between the cells. And things can shift much more fully and much more quickly.
Is there a tie between your cranial sacral work and that lymph drainage?
Yeah, it's all tied together. They all support each other. So when you're doing craniosacral work, it's light touch movements on the bones of the body and in the tissues of the body. And when you open a space or allow the body, encourage the body to open up a space, the lymph will flow better. The blood will flow better. The chi will flow better. But sometimes one thing works better than another. And that's why it's good to have lots of tools in the bag. Who knows which one works best? Sometimes I don't even do anything specific. I just try to connect to some deep, important energy and let that find its rhythm. Sometimes I do really specific things.
Find its rhythm. I think I remember this is kind of a pulse that comes with a healthy flow, with a healthy lymph system, isn't it?
Often when there's a release, there's some sort of pulse, and that you can feel that, and there's usually some sort of heat release also. And you can get these same experiences doing the Qigong practice.
What about things like autism or the brain? Okay, it seems to me what you're saying is the brain seems to be a natural place to expect huge results with all this stuff. We will go back to the physical practice, but I'm interested in how the lymph, if it's moving and clearing and detoxifying, doesn't that affect the brain really well?
A lot. I would love to see a lot more lymph work being done on the skull and in the brain.
Yeah, on the skull.
On the skull, under the skull, and in the brain, around the skull.
Have you ever worked on people with autism or Alzheimer's?
I haven't done that yet, but some people have, and they've had some results. I mean, there's still a lot of mysteries out there, but we're getting better. We're now starting to learn about MS, for instance, multiple sclerosis, and a lot of times moving stuck fluids, in particular, through the brain really helps the symptoms.
Well, so over in China, they've been doing these things for a long time, haven't they?
They have.
Do they have the same profile as we do over here of autism, ADD, Alzheimer's, and all of those things?
I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be an interesting study, wouldn't it?
Because when you're doing Chinese medicine, you define things completely different. They define things by different categories than we do in the West. You know, they would call autism some other syndrome based on yin and yang and the different elements. And that's how they would describe it so they'd know how to treat it. You know, maybe it's a heat disease. We don't think of it in those terms at all. They think of it more functionally. We just try to describe the symptoms.
So are you able to bring the Eastern stuff into the Western modalities of chiropractic quite easily? Or is it
well, that's what I've been working on doing for the last 20 years.
Great.
Trying to simplify it for my understanding as well as for the understanding of people I'm talking to. And the way you know someone understands it is to see if they get it in their body, not to see if they hear your words. So there's a lot of words out there that are just go over our heads. We don't absorb. We don't understand the context.
We collect the information and we don't integrate it, right?
So like if I'm doing Qigong with you and I say, okay, now notice how your heart's tight. And you say, okay. And then I say, okay, now relax down into your belly. And then you don't know what I mean. I would have to find some other way to describe or to help you understand in a kinesthetic way, in a felt way, how to do that. And then when you do that, you feel it, I see it, and now you know it's true. Before it was a theory, it was an idea. So that's, I think, the way to do it. You simplify it in terms that anybody listening to you can understand, but you also make it real in the present moment.
That's really interesting. When you're setting up a daily practice, what do you recommend that people do? It's all about movement, right? And it's all about flow.
Well, find a class, a teacher, a book.
When you hold me, lonely in love. back those words you once told me. Coming home feels just like living alone. Was there something more I should have known? What have I done? Takes all the joy from tomorrow. Thank you.
hoping for a second chance. Watch it as the lights go dim, the night falls down on me. I will follow. Take me there. If we believe, we can make it anywhere. Save me, I'm falling. Reach out and don't let go. Hear me, I'm calling. Hold me tight, don't be afraid to show. Close your eyes and dream. Hold me till the break of dawn. Save me, I'm falling. Reach out and don't let go. Hear me, I'm calling. Hold me tight, don't be afraid to show me your heart. How do you feel? Open your eyes, 'cause this time is real. Open your mind, show me your soul.
I've been to the stars and back. Was I right or was I wrong?
feeling, not knowing a possibility.
So do you think they, I mean, I believe if I remember correctly, the panels were sewn into two at the end of the 19th
yeah.
century. Do you think it was found then? Do you think that it is just in this panel, or do you think, because there were other panels which were sewn at that moment in time, do you think that all of them contain something? And do you think that is related to the theft, or how do you position all of these pieces?
There were certain two in a museum in Berlin. That's one thing. I think they didn't find what they wanted to find, what they were looking for, and that I think that was the reason why the justice had to be stolen again. That's the case here.
Okay, so. We are 60 years on. The judges is still officially missing. You have written books about its disappearance. Do you think it's ever going to be found again?
No, I think it doesn't exist anymore. It was stolen, and the thief thought they would pay for it, and he wanted to give it back, and maybe it was 2 months, maybe, but now it's more than 50, more than 70 years, and I think it doesn't exist anymore. I think it's lost forever, and that's a pity.
That's absolutely a gigantic loss. So we have kind of covered the Flemish mysteries somewhat. There are still hundreds to discuss with you. But moving from one mystery to another, another mystery you have been involved with and which you share lots in common with of focusing on it, first of all, is the mystery of a abbey in the southern parts of Belgium called Orval,
mm-hmm.
which you have written about in novel form. It's obviously part of Kathleen's The Book of Love. You have added quite an interesting dimension to Orval in the sense that you have linked it with Nostradamus.
Mm-hmm.
So could you briefly introduce us to how you put those, that tremendously often quoted person in the context of a medieval abbey, which so many people have written about and really have focused on, but you really have added that Nostradamus dimension to it.
Mm-hmm. I have written some books for children and young adults, and one of these books is called The Treasure of Orval, because treasure stories and young adults, they love it. And that's the way I was researching some issues about Orval, and one of the things we have to say that is the old abbey. When we visit Orval, you see a new abbey and you see an old abbey. The old abbey was sacked, was burned to the ground during the French Revolution. And why it was sacked, why it was burned by the French troops, because Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette were flying from Paris. They wanted to reach Montmédy in the northeast of France. They wanted to start a counter-revolution. They sent a war chest ahead, and they were arrested in Varennes, half the way to Orval. But they were on their way to Orval, to Montmédy. Montmédy and Orval. Montmédy is in France. Orval is in Belgium, but it's on the border. It's only 12, 13 kilometers from Orval to Montmédy. And Montmédy is a fortress town. And they had an army there, and they had to pay the army, and that's the reason why they had this war chest too. And we know all that. It's not legends or something. It's plain history. That's one thing. The war chest was lost. We don't know where it. When it was hidden, we think it was hidden in Orval. And we think also that Orval was sacked and burned by the French troops because of this war chest. And because Louis XVI was given a refuge there. That's one thing. Another thing that is that we know that... Marie Antoinette and Louis XVI were communicating with the royalists and with Marie Antoinette, the brother, was the emperor of Austria, and they couldn't write their letters because the revolutionaries were everywhere and they read their letters. Their letters had to be coded. They had to be coded messages about when we want to fly, when and where this war chest has to be hidden, and how the counter-revolution has to be made, and that sort of things. And okay, that's one thing. Now, if you see, if you look at the quatrains of Nostradamus, you find a lot of quatrains about a treasure, but you also find quatrains with Orval in it, and with a temple and with ruins. You even find a root in it. And I think that they have used some quatrains of Nostradamus, and they have written other quatrains, and they have invented prophecies, and they have said this is written by Nostradamus to communicate with each other in a code that could not be broken, because they knew it was Nostradamic. Nostradamic code. That's what I think was the matter here with Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette and this treasure of Orval. Now, Nostradamus lived in Orval. We know that for sure. There is a garden with all sort of herbs in it, and Nostradamus was interested in that sort of things. He has made a lot of travels, and he has lived for a few years in the Abbey of Orval. People say that he might have written a prophecy that's called the Prophecy of Orval, and that's attributed to sometimes to a man named Olivarius, but it could be an other name for Nostradamus. And in this prophecy of Orval too, we see the same symbols. We see the same story is unfolding here, and we also think that some parts of it are written by Nostradamus, and other parts are written by royalists or monarchists who are with Louis XVI and Louis XVII. His son that could have died in the temple prison or not, and that they were communicating with each other using these Nostradamic quatrains and prophecies. Old ones and new ones.
When I first met you and you started revealing some of these stories about Orval to me, I was just completely mesmerized by them, and I still am. A lot of this information is historically earth-shattering. This is big stuff. And yet nobody talks about it. There are so many ways to go in discussing this. I want to go back for a minute. You say definitively that we know that Nostradamus lived in Orval for a few years. To me, that is a revelation. That is extremely important for a lot of reasons, certainly in the work that I do. My questions are, how do we know that? Where is that information coming from? And at what stage in Nostradamus' life do you believe that we can prove he was in Orval?
Well, hello, everybody. This is Doug Newsom, and I'm interrupting because I made a boo-boo, and I'm going to confess up to it. I cut off the last file early and then reintroduced a portion of it. So, what am I going to do? I'm going to have this file in its entirety, even the best part at the end, play after the next show. So, it will be a continuation, and I hope you all will join us for that file, and it will be run in its entirety without mistake. Forgive me. And in the next couple of minutes, we'll bring you the next show.